Jezreel 9.
Would you take us up the lagoon? We know it's not, it's still mine. You take us up to the lagoon and land a party, a representative party, on the Piazza del San Marco. Well, Peter Thomas is willing to do anything. And so we landed, loaded four jeeps with all their weaponry on the Turvey landing craft. One with Popsky and Jan and the Italian officer Gigi, who became one with JC and Gino. And I've forgotten who was the last one. The last jeep was myself, George Sonley, and Mac McCluskey. We were making a ceremonial gesture, in effect. So up we stormed up the Piazza del San, up to the Piazza del San Marco. We didn't hit any mines. We didn't even see any mines. But we landed there. Apparently the first vehicle that had been ashore since the 15th century in the square. And we drove round the square, and I have a photograph taken by one of the Italian press liberating Venice. And having made our point, we then went back to Chioggia. And we pushed off the following morning. I presume because we hadn't got a patrol leader then, we seemed to be with Popsky. But I know that I went up into the Alps towards the Yugoslav border. I crossed the border, but whether I crossed the border into Austria or Yugoslavia, I don't know. But the defences, the heavy fortifications, were facing the way, as we went through them, were facing the way from which we had come. So I must have crossed into the border. One of these mysteries, perhaps one day somebody will tell me. But I had two jeeps under my command, and we went up into this mountain road and set up ambushes. And I heard a vehicle coming, and I had the chaps all ready to shoot it. A German staff car was coming. I could see it coming up this twisty mountain road. And at the last moment, luckily, I didn't give the order to the fire, because sitting in this thing, I never know, there's no way I was going to stop it by that time, and I was never know who they were or what they were doing. There was a British staff officer with a red band around his hat, so he must have been at least a brigadier, and two high-ranking German officers sitting in this German staff car, heading down towards Yugoslav. I don't know what they were doing. I held my hand on the firing because I thought, well, crumbs, what the devil, I'm going to shoot a British staff officer unless we're careful. So we let them through. They looked absolutely amazed, the fact that as they came round there, there were four machine guns trained on them, but they went straight past and I didn't stop them. But I wondered who they were and where they were going. I've always wondered where they were going and what they were doing. Sat up there for the rest of the day, and nothing more happened on the road. And then linked up with Popsky on the foothills of the Alps somewhere. And we were just laying about and talking. And somebody brought him a message, and Popsky said, I suppose three or four jeeps there. I suppose he must have taken command of the patrol himself. He said, the war's over. I don't know what the hell we're going to do now. This is Popsky. He said, you won't like it. He said, the war's over, we'll have to decide what we're going to do after that. But he said, we've got a lot of work to do. He said, I've got a bottle of scotch. He said, we'll drink this bottle to celebrate and we're still alive and we'll carry on be ready in the morning, we've got to move off very early. And we did. We moved off very early. B Patrol went up to the Vertice in Austria and swung right to meet Yugoslavs pouring into what was then Steiermark. The Germans called it Steiermark, it's, the Austrians it, to Austria is Carinthia. They stopped them at the border and to accept German surrender from any troops coming back over the Yugoslav border. S Patrol went up to Koflak to meet the Russians at as far north as they could get. B Patrol, I don't really know where they were all split into small units. We had one chap from S Patrol who received wounds that day when he was fired at while carrying a white flag and by Yugoslav partisans, but Yugoslav partisans were the Germans, as far as I'm concerned, did no harm whatsoever by hanging them. Because subsequently, we were absolutely swamped by Yugoslavs coming over the border. They'd been told to get back over their own side of the border, but they'd said they were going to annex Carinthia and Trieste. And it became a very hoary situation, with Yugoslavs everywhere, looting, raping, anything you like that they could find their hands on, and a very thin screen, really, of British troops there to control it. There were some heated exchanges, and they kept on saying that the Russians would help me if we started on them. So Potsky decided that he was going to see what the Russians really would do, and whether, as everybody was saying, they would really withdraw back towards Vienna, or whether they were massing to help the Yugoslavs. So he made up a little whatnot of his own, a little patrol of his own, to penetrate all the way through the Russian lines, and I was one of those that went with him, and JC, with his whiskers. He said that would be a good gimmick, the whiskers, because JC had the most electric reddy brown whiskers. And Ali Stewart in case, because he was a brilliant mechanic, in case anything went wrong with the Jeep. So we went up. We had some trouble with one Russian detachment. They all viewed us with the greatest suspicion when we bumped into them in some woods. And they were very, very, very suspicious of us indeed. But Potsky mellowed them with some scotch and what have we carried. So we penetrated right through to Vienna. And we watched the road for some days. In fact, we went right into the centre of Vienna. Saw the little Russian girls doing their immaculate direction of traffic. And drove out again, parked ourselves up in some woods watching the road. And we could see then that the Russians were not going to support Tito. They were withdrawing, according to their word, one of the few times they kept their word. But they were withdrawing according to their word. And so we could take a far stiffer line with the Yugoslavs. In fact, it did become a question of either get out or fight. The guards I was very impressed with the guards one day. They were moving them right back. And the guards came out and the sergeant major of the guard told the Yugoslavs to get out of this village. And he said, no, so he didn't fire anything like that, he just hit him. And so then the Yugoslavs scarpered back. And said, we'll bring a tank. And they said, about a mile down the road, a light tank appeared. So the God said, oh, right, they brought up a tank, an M10 tank destroyer, which had a naval gun on it, and had blown it to smithereens. Needless to say, the light tank beat it. Potsky asked me to go as his bodyguard one day up into the mountains and see what was happening. And we went up there in the little wooden track. We went through the forest and we came to a place of just a house there, an old woman, and a Yugoslav busy looting all her furniture. And Potsky said, told the chap to put it back. He wasn't supposed to be up in there. He was supposed to be back across the Yugoslav border. The chap was, they were so cocky because they'd got away with so much. And he told me, Potsky, to go to hell. And so Potsky told him he'd give him 10 seconds to start putting the stuff back. And the chap just laughed, so Potsky said, lost it. When I count 10, if he had not started the 10, shoot him and make sure he's dead. And the chap then didn't start unloading the stuff he'd taken off this old woman's house. And we saw him on his way with dire threats, confiscated his weapons and sent him on his way. I wrote in my diary, so at this time, if this is peace, give me war at any time. When we went into Velden, when we first went up to Velden on the Wörthersee, it was a convalescent place for German troops. There were a lot of amputees and what have you. And one of them said to me, you know, you're backing the wrong side here. You will have to fight them in the end. He's very nearly proved to be right, hasn't he? But if you'll just keep out of it and give us our arms, we will go back. The Russians behaved abominably. The chaps who were pro-Russian in PPA, after a short period of meeting the Russians, we knew that the Germans had a good case to go to war with them.
In what sense? In what sense were they misbehaving?
Well, they're raping and looting all over everywhere they went. They really were. And they weren't our friends. They were always suspicious. Bordering on war the whole time we were there. After about 2 months of this, we were quite happy to have gone to war with the Russians. I think the majority of the British troops would have done as well. But we didn't. We got deflected from this because then another crisis erupted. That the Italian partisans were refusing to hand in their arms, and they were seeking to establish a communist state in northern Italy. And we had a mad scream from 8th Army HQ that the partisans had surrounded 8th Army HQ, and since we were the people who knew them, to go back and persuade them that to hand in their arms and give up this idea. This became very hairy, because we then shot off all over the place, up into the mountains, and to stop these partisans coming down with their weapons to start another revolution, a communist revolution in Italy. It worked well. We stopped them.
Did they take much stopping?
They were a bit reluctant at first, but some of them knew us and knew what we would be like if they did give trouble. And Potsky established a very, very good relationship with the main partisan, the most powerful partisan leader on that, certainly on the Adriatic side, a chap named Bulow. And they set up that they would have a giant victory parade in Udine, and with token number of arms there, which would then be handed in and left. And Bulow would receive and very high rank in Italian award for his courage. All the ones that we found coming down from the mountains, they were carrying their weapons. We just said, stop and leave your weapons. They argued a bit, but don't forget that each when they stopped, they were looking down the muzzles of two machine guns and another chap standing there with a Tommy gun. And so there was never any, I never fired them, but one chap did fire on a lorry load of them. I think it was Tolly Sloan fired on them, but there were no repercussions. I mean, apart from the fact that he knocked off the lorry load, there were no repercussions about it. It was a very tense political situation. And it was solved by this, I can only call it, demobilisation parade in Udine. And after that, there was no more real trouble. Then we settled down. I had a leave came up. I'd been overseas for nearly 4 years. And I had a leave. When I came back, Potsky called us together and said, look, you've got two options. I've been given a choice. You can either smarten yourselves all up and look like soldiers for a change, and then you'll get bags of ball, but you'll be the bodyguard of the British commissioner in Vienna. I don't think that will last very long before you're in trouble. Potsky was a realist. Or you can all volunteer en masse and we'll go and fight the Japanese from China. Yeah, it all worked out. Especially going to the Gobi Desert. And he said, now make up your mind, we've got to decide today, what do you want to do? So we all volunteered to go and fight the Japanese. Anything rather than get turned into proper soldiers. But then, of course, what happened? The atomic bomb finished the war, so it all fizzled out, and Potsky tried to find us all jobs. Now, Jan Canary, the second in command, the Frenchman, said he would like me to go. Would I go with him? He was working for El Cacu. El Cacu was Concentration Area Control Unit. And would I go with him as his bodyguard? So I went with Jan Canary, and we started on this job of trying to sort out, in the first place, what was going to happen to all these hordes of Yugoslav soldiers and Russian soldiers. It was a great tragedy. We sold them down the river. I only have to see the name of Macmillan mentioned, and I think of the way we sold these people down the river, because they had their women with them, and some of them were extraordinarily beautiful. And all they were going to get when they were handed back to their own country, there's no doubt about it, the officers were going to get shot, and they told me quite frankly that they would be shot as soon as they were handed over. And they were all very worried about their women. And the women, I must admit, were a great lot. The women I met all said, well, they would go back with their husbands or their lovers and face the same thing. But I always felt that we were selling them down the river. The war was over. They had surrendered without fighting us. And some of them certainly didn't deserve the end they got. But however,
where were these personnel?
All over in the mountains, and all over the place, into the mountains and forests, and they had these camps set up, and they were, the Hungarians were down on the plains going towards Villach, but the ones in the mountains I met were in the mountains up between Klagenfurt and Velden, or Klagenfurt. And Judenburg, well, I can't remember exactly. I know there's some mountains and forests there.
Well, did all the British personnel feel the same way as you, or did you come across any who thought otherwise?
I don't think, I never came across anybody that felt otherwise, but most of these meetings that we had with them were rather clandestine, in so much as there would be a German officer there, and Jan Canary, and myself, and perhaps a German bodyguard. I know that the chap that was one of the German heroes of the Battle of Cassino, I met him, he was with one of the Russian, one of the German officers, colonel, and Weiss, Hauptmann Weiss, he's one of the heroes of the Cassino, and from the first parachute, the German first parachute division, he was there. But we didn't normally see other troops. I believe when they finally were escorted, the Russians finally escorted back over, they had British troops lining the roads to make sure that they didn't try and jump off lorries and what have you. Certainly there were strong rumours about British troops feeling very irate about all this. Well, the lot that I was most involved with were these Yugoslavs. And I never did know whether they went back or not. We lost that job, Jan and I, and I was then given a job virtually running as a courier between Potsky, who was the chief interpreter, right-hand man of the British High Commissioner in Vienna, and Jan, who was running things of all these clandestine operations in southern Austria, and I would run messages back from one to the other. It all became very dodgy and a bit dicey as to about what was going on. We also had the job later on of sorting out, as members of CACU, of trying to sort out demobilising German forces from Austrian forces, for the SS and what have you, and we had some German interpreters and some Czech doctors from the German army. Oh, it was quite a pantomime. Everything was so so intermingled of intrigue and what have you that I'd been quite happily to say, well, if this is peace, as I put in my diary, if this is peace, give me war every time. You never really knew when your back was safe when you're on your own. As far as I was concerned, I was quite happy doing this. There was a German countess, an Austrian countess was the interpreter, and the Czechoslovakian, the German officer, the Czechoslovakian, who was a medical officer, and we were trying to sort out the SS from the rank and file. Because the SS, although whether they were Waffen SS or political SS, were not allowed to be demobilised. They all had to go and be handed over to the Field Security Service. It was grossly really unfair because the Waffen SS were certainly no worse than we were, and we found that they behaved as certainly as honourably or dishonourably as you like, as we did. But people say all these things about the SS and what have you, and the hanging of partisans. I would have definitely, if I'd been on their side, I would have hung them with the same alacrity. But
can you say why?
Pardon?
Can you say why?
Oh, yes, I can say why. Partisans could take no prisoners. They literally couldn't. So any prisoner that they took had a limited use to them before they killed them. Information, then kill them. Now, so that being so, troops who have their comrades, even they didn't even know them, that this was happening to them, it's only fair that you should put them away as quickly on the same basis. It was a silly It was a catch-can situation, because there's no way a partisan could take a prisoner. And don't forget, these were the same people who were smiling at you and shaking your hand and having a glass of wine for you, who were not really doing very much damage, and they got into quite big units. The partisans in Italy, their bravest moments on the whole were when they were shaving the heads of women who'd slept with or had been friendly with German troops. It was all a bit pathetic, really. And no way would I sort of eulogise what the partisans did, because they were very useful, and they served a tremendously useful purpose, because while the Germans still had to keep troops in rear areas, just in case, if they didn't keep them, these partisans would have started a mass movement of murder and warfare. And they were absolutely invaluable for telling you where Germans were and where mines were laid and that kind of thing. Not always accurate, but where mines were was normally there, very accurate. So they were invaluable, but as fighting units, they really were virtually non-starters.
Did they wear a uniform?
No. You know, they had bits and pieces of... they had bits and pieces of any person's uniform sometimes. The majority of them just used to have a scarf around their necks for the Garibaldi brigades, who were communist. They had the red scarf. The Royalists, to my memory, had a red and green scarf around their necks. Neither of them liked one another very much. But the communist ones were more disciplined, because they had the discipline of the Communist Party behind them. But their real effort, there's no doubt about it, their real motive in life was the establishment of a communist state. It wasn't really for the liberation of Italy. It meant the liberation of Italy with a communist head. And if it hadn't have been for the British and American and Allied troops there, that's what they would have got, because they were far stronger than the Royalist brigades. They weren't really brigades as such. Everybody talks about such and such a brigade of partisans, and whether a brigade would probably be 100 or 200 men at the most. But they were always called the Garibaldi Brigade. They always gave themselves very important. But occasionally you got a first-class bloke, like Gigi Gardano. A general in the Italian army. He was a partisan leader, and his partisans were like mustard, but he was a regular Italian officer. And he was a cracking good soldier. So yes, it's individuals like him. Bulo, the communist majordomo, the most powerful chap, was certainly a brave.